Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a Dhamma talk from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey. If you find benefit from this talk, please support the restoration, the preservation, and the presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma with your donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. The Karma Sutta, and I think you'll notice where it's falling in this particular study and where it fell in our Truth of Happiness Dhamma study. Following our look at self-imposed stress and suffering, the Salatha Sutta, a clear understanding of dependent origination and how ignorance conditions the minds towards further ignorance, towards compulsive further ignorance. And this sutta is, let me say it this way, karma was a very common word during the Buddha's time, which was used as a catch-all for stress and suffering. Karma was always, during human history, looked at as a grand universal system of behavior modification through reward and punishment. It's always thought that way in one form or another. And, you know, we have these phrases, oh, he has good karma. Somebody had a bad day, they had bad karma. I always think about this now just because of how my thoughts when it happened. Years ago, there was a tsunami in Japan that knocked out, killed millions and millions, hundreds of thousands of people anyway. And one of the things that I heard is, boy, they must have had some really bad karma. The AIDS crisis was taught as karma for people that were engaged in homosexuality. That, again, you hear the excitement in my voice, but it's more towards the misuse of karma and how we've taken what you'll hear is it was one of the most beautiful teachings and corrupted it in a way that so that we can continue our own ignorance. That's how karma is applied. You'll see that the Buddha used a common word, karma, in a completely uncommon way for the sole purpose of relating to his students. He would have been an awful teacher if he didn't use those things that were distracting his students, would they? Such as, this is karma as I teach it. If karma wasn't a common word during his time, he may not have even used karma. He may have used something else to describe this process of what we're talking about. So karma in the Buddha's Dhamma is very simple. And it points to what we talk about all the time. Where we practice Dhamma is at the point of contact. There is no Dhamma in the past. There's no Dhamma in the future. There's only Dhamma right here and right now. And right here and right now is where karma is unfolding. Karma, within the framework of the Dhamma, is past intentional acts moderated by the present level of mindfulness. And a little bit more elaborate way of saying that it is the experience of the reemergence of past intentional acts experienced by conditioned views that can only continue further suffering. That's karma. So what's arising in this moment is my karma. If I want to know what my karma is, sit down and think about my life. That's my karma. But how I feel about what's unfolding, we know as wise Dhamma practitioners, when seen through right view, has no consequence. It's simply an observance of life as life occurs. And at that point, there is no karma left. And you'll understand that in a moment. Karma relates to suffering. Karma is suffering. Karma is anatta, wrong views of self rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Karma is, and this follows directly from our last three classes, karma is the five clinging aggregates. Well, the Karma Sutta. On one occasion, the Buddha addressed those gathered. Listen and pay close attention, friends, and I will teach you past and current karma, the cessation of karma, and the path and practice leading to the cessation of karma. Just an amazingly clear and concise teaching. The Buddha is just describing his entire Dhamma again, right here. I will teach you past and current karma, the cessation of karma, and the path and practice leading to the cessation of karma. Explained in this way, taught in this way, it's hard to understand how people became so misinformed and misunderstand this simple teaching. Past karma is to be seen as the sixth sense base. The sixth sense base are our five physical senses, and the sixth sense of consciousness In this case, it's consciousness rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. It's that type of consciousness that is interpreting what's coming into contact with the sixth sense base. Karma is the sixth sense base. What does the Buddha mean by that? It's a pretty powerful declarative statement. Karma is our senses. Now remember the qualification. Karma is the sixth sense base to a mind rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Can anybody...
If you come into contact with wrong, with a wrong view, you'll interpret feeling correctly.
Yes, and that's karma. The wrong interpretation of life as life unfolds, the wrong interpretation of the three marks of existence, the wrong interpretation of me, results in karma. And an easier way to say it, a more direct way, is wrong views of me is karma. Is my karma unfolding?
So the sixth sense base does not relate to what we experience in the world.
Yes, it does.
It does.
Yes, and it's also, again, calling the sixth sense base karma doesn't mean that it's not anything else in our lives. Mm-hmm. It is our life, isn't it? And so, again, another way of maybe elaborating that is that the sixth sense base is the cause and the experience of suffering until it's liberated.
John?
Yes?
Is this sixth sense base is kind of like the little windows that we contact the world, right? So if the windows are tainted by the ignorance...
Yep. Remember
so
when
it's
the...
like our view is...
Yes, the Buddha teaches the each sense base as having its own type of consciousness, meaning there's eye consciousness. You remember me teaching
yeah,
that.
I remember.
And of course it does, doesn't it? Because I could see something and not have an accurate smell of that. And so what my senses would probably identify through my vision, even though my smell is saying, wait, that's not it. My consciousness is at odds with each other. I'm using an example. It has no relation to the Dhamma, but it relates to your question. So it is then up to me to start using my other senses to interpret this. But if all of my senses are rooted in ignorance, I can only interpret something towards ignorance to fit that view. That's why my sixth sense base is karma, because it's creating the conditions for suffering. It's creating the conditions for further ignorance. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Great question. Thank you. Karma is fabricated by intention, wrong intention, and experienced by sense contact. Again, karma is what's occurring right now if my mind is rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, because I will interpret it through ignorance and create more suffering out of it. The sixth sense base is past karma. So a mind that is not yet liberated, everything that is occurring to it is dragging that past karma into this present moment. Then what happens to it? Current karma is fabricated thoughts, words, and deeds arising and passing away. And look at the sequence. In relation to the conditioned experience that's brought out from my past. Are you following me?
Mm-hmm.
And that experience that is carried from my past into this present moment is originated and maintained through the sixth sense base. That's why it's so important to understand where the Dhamma is practiced. Because I could have all the intention to awaken, but if my practice has me outside of my body doing something that is a speculative Dharma practice, there's no resolution. There can be no resolution. Because I'm now using a Dharma practice to maintain a completely troubled and confused mind.
So is that because your ego is either trying to project itself into a next lifetime, or even if you're trying to, if you believe it's annihilation, it's also based on an ego self that is grounded in these aggregates that aren't anything but arising and passing away.
Exactly. So even to that mind, that would be aspiring towards nothingness or emptiness, which is true annihilation, isn't it? Which is something the Buddha didn't taught. But so that if your belief is that the culmination of my so-called spiritual practice is the establishment of emptiness, What's my karma? My karma is that thought. My karma is that thought that's directing the rest of my life towards achieving my goal of emptiness. That's my karma. And that was a perfect explanation, David, that you gave. It related exactly to what we're talking about. So my karma is what's happening. If I'm disappointed in any way about my life, it's because I've made poor choices. And I've made poor choices based on a lack of understanding. All of that is undone or undoable through the Buddha's Dhamma.
So it goes back to your teaching of the six properties, that you're simply that.
That's it.
And to do anything, and as hard as it is to accept that, that you're nothing more, that's where your suffering comes from.
That's karma. Yep. Just the thought that I need something more or less in this moment causes karma. In the sense, again, it's not karma as a reward and punishment. It's karma in relation to the Buddha's Dhamma, meaning we're continuing suffering. We're continuing ignorance. That's what karma is. Karma is a present moment unfolding of past intentional actions moderated by present level mindfulness, what I'm holding in mind. So a conditioned mind is always rehashing the past as an explanation and a description of what's occurring. Nothing is ever new in that way. There's nothing novel in the immediate moment, is there? That's why life is meaningless. Because we're not living that life. We're trying to be more than a six-property person, and we've lost our minds doing so. That's karma. But we're not lost, and there's a simple and direct way out of it. That's why I think this is, again, one of the most brilliant suttas, because how simple and direct the Buddha describes the problem. Carrying or taking information through something that is not able to process information correctly, my sixth sense base, creating a life out of that view, and then insisting that that's correct, that's karma. It's also ignorance, isn't it? So another way for karma, you could just say karma is the vehicle for continued suffering. But we get to drive the vehicle to wherever we want, turn it off, and get out. It's up to us. And the Eightfold Path is the way to turn it off. This is current karma. I started doing something new. I can't figure it out. I keep getting this other window. This is current karma. Cessation of karma is the release from ignorance of Four Noble Truths and the three forms of stress and suffering of bodily, verbal, and mental fabrications. How could anybody be confused about what awakening is meant by the Buddha? That's it. This is the cessation of karma. The path leading to the cessation of karma is precisely the Noble Eightfold Path. Right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right meditation. This is the Noble Eightfold Path of practice leading to the cessation of karma. Another powerfully declarative statement. If you want to know what the Buddha's Dhamma is about, read that one line. You know what its purpose is, and you know what to do. Friends, I have now taught you past and current karma, the cessation of karma, and the Noble Eightfold Path leading to the cessation of karma, or dukkha, or suffering. Whatever any teacher would do out of true sympathy and compassion for their students, I love this line, I have done for you with this teaching. So that's a very powerful declarative statement that might not be as obvious as it is. Whatever any teacher would do out of true sympathy and compassion for their students, I have done for you with this teaching. Out of compassion for his students, he gave this teaching. He gave a teaching that was completely contrary to everything that everybody believed at his time, much like you're seeing here, and he did it for the most compassionate reasons. Not to declare that, guess what, everybody out there doesn't know anything about what they're doing. He didn't say that. Because he didn't care about that. Siddhartha Gautama never cared about being recognized as the world's greatest whatever. He only wanted to live an awakened life, and that compelled him to teach an authentic Dhamma. And that's what he's doing here. Michael?
Yeah, and that's the three marks of existence, that line there, too.
Yes, right? Yes. So the three marks of existence are all part of that. Dukkha, anatta, karma, you know? The five clinging aggregates, the sixth sense base, they're all aspects of dukkha. In fact, you could say dukkha is the overarching term that includes all of those other things. The Buddha continues, don't be mindless. Don't be foolish. Do not fall into regret for not developing the Dhamma. Over there are roots of trees and empty huts. Establish seclusion, meaning establish jhana, and practice jhana. This is my teaching to you. So the Buddha gives this most significant, important sutta, concludes it by saying, develop the Eightfold Path and go find the root of a tree or an empty hut and do jhana. And in that way we awaken. We end all karma. I was going to call on Mary Beth first and she snuck out. So, Jane, how are you?
I'm fine, John. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to hear you. I was going to almost said good to see you, but good to hear you.
Incognito.
That's okay.
I enjoyed the teaching. I just love the fact that, you know, anybody can explain why something is happening, but to give, a way to end the suffering, that's the key part.
Yeah, and that's a significant difference between what Siddhartha taught. So. Thank you, Jane. Josh, how are you tonight?
Good, John. Hello, everybody. I'm just going to listen tonight.
I'm glad you joined us, my friend. Tim, how are you?
Hello, everybody. Good.
Good to see you.
such a nice sutta. You know, the Buddha is so... he's really giving people a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah.
In this, because of the complexity, the quickness of karma, of how it develops so quickly.
Yeah.
I love the line. I think it may be in your notes, John. Actually, but I think it's Buddha's words from a different sutta where he says, "I am the owner of my actions, heir to my actions. I am born of my actions, related through my actions. My actions will determine the fortune or misfortune in my life."
Yep.
And that's such a powerful statement. That is karma.
That is.
What you do at this present moment dictates the next.
Yep.
And if your present state of mind is from a way with wrong view, your karma is not going to be so great.
That's right.
So get on the cushion, meditate, and get right view established.
Get rid of it. You got it, Tim. Thank you so much. I don't think I said it. Karma literally means action. And so the reference to it is that it is our actions that determine our karma, and it is our actions that determine if we'll awaken. The subtitle to this Dhamma Sutta is Acting to Awaken. It's up to us. It's our actions that will determine that. Thank you, Tim. Good evening, Rom.
Good evening. It's interesting to see this sutta, how the differences, how he almost uses karma and dukkha as the same thing.
Yes.
He basically runs through the Four Noble Truths with karma instead of dukkha.
Yeah.
But you pointed that karma is the vehicle for suffering. And if karma is action, there's your vehicle. There's a movement that we're all in, and that movement causes suffering, and that same vehicle can get us out of suffering. Yeah. And it's and it's nice. It's so clear. Where if you look at any other explanation of dukkha, it gets, of karma, it gets very, very complicated. You don't even go near the Abhidhamma And now you're into, just sausage.
Yeah. And again, you look at how simple and direct this is. I mean, you really have to work at messing this up.
Yeah. I'm the owner of my actions. Boy, does it get any simpler than that?
Yeah. Thank you, Ram. And you can also see why it was done, why karma was made to be like hell or purgatory. I mean, that's that's the knee-jerk reaction to any of this.
Yeah,
there has to be.
It takes the responsibility away from you.
Yep.
Is there somebody else whacking me over the head?
Yeah.
Or I did something really bad, or maybe even really good at something, and look at where I am now.
Look at where I am now.
There's no responsibility.
Again, that's the whole thing. It's one of the things, it took me a while to realize what that really meant, but when I finally understood a little bit about what the Buddha taught, that one thing that I'm responsible for all of this was so inspiring and enervating. And I think it's what keeps all of us going, too, is that little bit. I'm smiling a little bit because I found a new way, a new mode, they're called, different ways of looking through this. And this one.
From there, Mark?
No, this one takes 30 years away. It's hard to describe. It's called bioptic. So I can focus on Ram's head, but it's blown up in the screen underneath here, and it also allows me to see more of the room, which is one of my complaints. When I first started using this, the field of view seemed so narrow, but I didn't know how to use it yet. This works pretty good. So thank you, Ram, and sorry that I was experimenting while you were talking. let me go over here. Hey, David.
Hello.
This works good.
I also like when in the past you said if you want to know what your karma is, look in the mirror.
Yep.
And those quiet moments when you know whether you're practicing with the right effort. Only you need to know that.
Yeah. That's right.
The Sangha doesn't need to know it. Your teacher doesn't need to know it.
He might be curious, though. But.
He might be. But he'll hear in your words, in your actions, if you're understanding and practicing. So, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, David. Thanks for being here. Good evening, Brett. How are you tonight?
Good, good. Thanks for the teaching. It was pretty direct. I got a lot out of it, and I think more right effort for me.
That sounds good.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brett. Good evening, Kate.
Good evening. I've been reading this for the last couple of days, and makes me think about when I first got sober. 100 years ago, and I heard people say, oh, sobriety is boring. Sobriety is boring. And if a person is used to living at a certain level of intensity, peacefulness is boring.
Yeah, it is.
And I don't know if it's maybe the older I get, the more peacefulness becomes really attractive.
Remember the line in the movie with Sheridan Green and her daughter? And at one point she blurts out, you were a lot more fun when you were drunk.
Oh, yeah.
Terms of Endearment.
Terms of Endearment.
Well, a man can't admit to knowing that movie. I never saw it. One of my favorite movies, by the way. I'm sorry, Kate.
But that's living at that level of intensity and chaos and stimulation and all of that stuff is absolutely not attractive anymore.
isn't that worth the price of admission?
You know?
Yeah.
What was the attraction? I don't know. Yeah. But I have conversations with my son on the front porch in the mornings when we drink coffee and eat our breakfast. And I've been talking to him a lot about this and asking him you know, you know you're creating all this stress inside your head, right? So...
Does he get that?
To a certain extent. And I keep saying to him, I don't want to talk about that. I don't, you know, I'm not interested. I don't want to get all intense.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to be intense, you can be intense, but take it someplace else. Don't put intensity on the porch. I'm just really appreciating what I'm learning. That's it.
Thank you, Kate. And that is, thank you for saying that, but it's important to say that, you know, to the Sangha, to yourself, to anybody else that might hear it. I was just talking to someone to the 12 steps are something that you do to initiate somebody into recovery. So I just took someone to the 12 steps the other day, and that they said that line. They said, sobriety is so boring. I said, no, it's not. I said, not drinking is boring. And you're bored because you can't think right now. In early sobriety, you can't think of anything else but drinking. But sobriety, man, you know, that's not boring at all, is it?
No.
Thank you, Kate. Good evening, Michael.
Hi, John. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Brian.
In understanding Anatta, as I think I do, I look at it as Anatta is Mina, it's Karma is the not self, it's Anatta. Okay? So, understanding again, what we are not is most important in understanding the different concepts that come up or that we've learned and introduced us to throughout this time. So I look at it like understanding what I am not, okay, will put an end to my karma, okay? Because it'll create, separate, it'll make me recognize, enable me to recognize what is, again, the not self, okay? And any actions that are from a conditioned response are the not self. And obviously...
Oh, would you say that last line again?
Any action that are from any conditioned responses are... from ignorance, from a deluded mind, a perfect delusion is the not self.
Yes.
So, therein for me is where it comes down to. It comes down to that, just that very understanding of to create a distance between the not self, or be able to see it from a dispassionate view. Creating space between our understanding the not self, dispassion will arise, as will disenchantment. Disenchantment and dispassion will arise. From there, the reactionary process of instant that karmic reaction could occur. We can again, once we create a little bit of a distance there to see it, we can react and put an end to our calm. React and put an end to it at the point of contact in that moment going forward. That's the way I see
it. Thank you, my friend. That's excellent. Julia, how are you?
Very good, John. Hello, everybody. My favorite part is the last part where the Buddha kind of almost, it almost sounds like he's speaking to children, where he says, don't be mindless. Don't be foolish.
Yeah.
Don't have regrets. Go look at the trees over there. Look to the trees. Go do jhana. You know. So he's pretty much giving them commands, telling them to do just. Okay, I gave you the lesson. Go now and practice that, because it's through jhana that we are capable of having that serenity, that the calm, peaceful mind to hold in mind the Eightfold Path, to be able to later on have wise restraint at Sixth Sense base, so we stop becoming further ignorant. So
exactly. Yep.
You see, this last line is important because he's telling them to just go back to your jhana practice now.
Yeah.
You have the lesson. So I like that part of the because it sounds so commanding, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you,
John. Beautiful, Julia. Yeah, the Buddha says it in here, out of great concern and compassion for his students. He teaches in that manner. He teaches in a very direct, put these back on just so I can finish talking. In a very direct but completely non-confrontational way of teaching. In other words, he's always very clear. He teaches in a way that didn't increase his own karma, because he was an awakened human being. This is something that took me a while to even realize. The awakened level of right speech is something to be noticed in the suttas. And I'm planning a talk on this for a while, just haven't gotten around to it. But you can learn a lot by right speech by understanding how the Buddha taught, because a knee-jerk reaction to right speech is that, and it's very relevant today, is that you would never say anything that might upset another person. Well, that's not what right speech is. Mm-hmm. Right speech isn't classic. In fact, it would be, you would end humanity if you insisted that people be like that. You couldn't survive in a world like that. So it's something else, isn't it? Right speech as it relates to karma is simply being honest and not hurtful towards yourself or anyone. And if you maintain that aspect of right speech, right action will follow, acting to awaken. And again, I think what I'm really trying to do, and I hope I'm doing a decent job of it, is to explain I do too many things. The utter simplicity of the Buddha's Dhamma, because it is right here. And it's what we talk about. This sutta happens to reinforce that central theme that we awaken right here, right now, with a mind united in this body, recognizing ignorance recognizing and abandoning ignorance as it arises and passes away. Tim brought up something a few classes ago now about the reconciliation of the Dhamma. This is where it is. This is where you look for reconciliation, is right here, right now. And as the Buddha said, through the Eightfold Path. Nothing could be more simple or direct than the sutta. The one thing I wanted to mention to everybody else, I don't think Michael and Julie might have heard it, the Wan weekend is off. Did I say that earlier? Jane, are you hearing this?
Yes, I couldn't come anyway, so...
Okay. Well, that's why it's off, because you weren't coming. So it's all Jane's fault. Now, there were the ever-changing situation, I kept getting different answers back, and nobody's quite sure what to do and how to act, and also I couldn't find anybody to take my dog on short notice. I probably could have, but we'll be there in November. We'll have our fall retreat, I think. So we'll finish as we always do with metta. These are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble, not conceited, contented and easily satisfied. Unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small. The seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desire, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class tonight. While I have the hiccups, peace. Good night, everyone. Thank you for joining online. See you soon.
John.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support the continued restoration, preservation, and presentation of the Buddha's Dhamma. If you find benefit here, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.